Yesterday, the chief and I spent the day meeting Angelenos, seeing the damage throughout the city that we saw firsthand. We went to the Valley in Encino and Studio City with Councilwoman Rahman, where we saw backyards destroyed and cars swept down driveways. We then went to Baldwin Hills with Council President Pro Tem Harris Dawson and Councilwoman Hutt to talk to Angelenos there. Angelenos should know that even though the rain may ease up a bit today, this storm continues, and that means we still need Angelenos to take precautions and to stay informed during this time.
LA Mayor Karen Bass at a news conference this morning, Sunday and Monday, those two were the third wettest two-day period on record in Los Angeles. Some parts of the city have seen more than a foot of rain, and all of that water has left a lot of damage. Power outages, fallen trees, flooding, hundreds of mudslides. They've all created hazards across the city, especially in the canyon areas. When Californians talk about the big one, we aren't usually talking about rainstorms, but our next guest argues that rain, intense, sustained rain that overwhelms our ability to control flooding, is the big one Californians need to understand. Joining us now is Dr. Lucy Jones, seismologist and author of the book, The Big Ones, How Natural Disasters Have Shaped Us and What We Can Do About Them. Welcome back to Press Play, Lucy.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right. So from what you can assess and see, how bad was this storm in terms of damage?
I haven't seen enough of the damage reports yet to be certain, but it is, you know, as you said, third wettest period on record. And it's the level of rain that's comparable to what happens in hurricanes. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the big things that we tend to, it's hard to understand, I think, here in California. Our atmospheric river storms are comparable to hurricanes in the amount of rain that they bring and therefore the damage that they can do. But because we don't name them and the wind is somewhat separate from the rain, we often underestimate what they're going to be.
Right. I guess it could have been a lot worse if it had been really windy, right?
Right. You add in a lot of wind, we would have seen a lot more trees down once you've really loosened up the soil this way. So there's ways it could have been compounded. But the biggest way you compound it is by having it last longer. Mm. You know, so these atmospheric rivers, as I said, they're these really intense storms. One definition of really intense rain is 16 inches in a three-day period. And very few places have ever recorded that. You get a couple of stations in the hurricane states. But there's a place in California that's seen this seven different times. So our atmospheric rivers are those really intense things. But there's only so much damage you do in just 3 days. Imagine if it kept on going.
Right.
And that's what we modeled back a decade ago when we were looking at the earthquake and we made the shakeout model for the earthquakes. We made the arc storm model for these atmospheric river storms, arc being atmospheric river 1000. But that's a name we made up, just like we did shakeout, to have something we could talk about.
And what does 1000 mean?
It's approximately 1,000, 1,000-year recur, or, 0.1% chance of happening in any 1 year, in any one location. In fact, we've seen these really long storms that go on for a long time, several times in California history. The only one in the historic record is 1861-62. 1938 went on for a couple of weeks. And 1861-62, there were 45 days straight of rain in Southern California, a total of 50 inches falling over those 45-day periods. But we can see in the geologic record there have been other times in the past where we've seen these extreme rain events.
And what happened in that period, 1861 to 1862?
That is the biggest disaster in California history. It killed 1% of the population because it happened over the whole state. So a lot of the mining communities up in the Sierras, this is, a decade after the beginning of the gold rush, were completely wiped away. There was the largest town between Los Angeles and New Mexico was a town called Agua Mansa on the banks of the Santa Ana River, completely washed away in one night. The Sacramento went under so much water that they gave up and moved the capital to San Francisco. And it was there for 6 months. And the Sacramento City Fathers, recognizing that they really could lose the capital and then there wouldn't be much left for them, actually went and raised a large section of Sacramento by 10 feet.
Oh, wow.
They brought in all this dirt to raise the roads, and people either cut off their houses and raised them or literally buried the first floor There's a really cool museum now called Sacramento Underground, where you can go and tour some of these underground first floors that were buried at the time.
Okay, so that's before climate change as we know it was happening, right?
Right.
And so now that we know all about climate change and know that it is supercharging these storms, what is the likelihood of having a repeat of that kind of storm now?
Well, we assume it's going up because when you have more energy in the atmosphere, you have more energy to drive these storms. I think that, you know, how we go about calculating the increase is subject to so many assumptions that I think we just need to say, we know we've had them in the past, and if anything, they're more likely now than before.
And just last year, we had a series of these really intense storms, and they did a lot of damage.
Oh, sure. And, you know, there have been other times, actually, the flow rates out of some rivers right now are already up to the level we saw in 1998. I don't know how many people remember those storms, but there was quite a bit of damage. And the other thing is these storms, you'll get these atmospheric river patterns, but you can sort of think of them as like a fire hose, right? It's a phenomenon where the water gets channeled into a relatively narrow band, a couple hundred kilometers. That's why it's called an atmospheric river, because you can see this band of moisture coming in off the ocean. But where it aims at the coast might move up and down. In 1861, 62, it started in Oregon and worked its way all the way down to the state where California was really, or Southern California was really hit at the end of this process. And we've seen different patterns of it. This one, as we've just seen, aimed at LA. If you're sitting in Santa Barbara or San Luis Obispo, you got rain, but you didn't get hit like we did. Other times it'll come in other locations.
Are we prepared infrastructure-wise for this? Because the LA River was built to withstand big storms, but we see it raging, and I don't know if it could top its banks, but it looks pretty close right now. What do you think of our infrastructure, our rivers and our dams?
We need to do more. Some of the things like our channeling system, the debris flow system, at least, you know, that was put in place mostly after the 1938 storms that killed more people than any earthquake ever has in Southern California, by the way. Almost 200 people died in that storm, or series of storms. And some of this is doing pretty well, but any flood control system is finite. And there will always be a storm bigger than what your flood control can handle. And so when you build them, you have to make a decision. How far are we willing to go? How much is, you know, what level should we be putting on this? And I'm more concerned, actually, if you go a little farther north, a lot of our levee systems, because those often weren't engineered. Those are built by farmers to, you know, be able to do some more planting in here. And look at like that Tule Lake that formed last year with all of the flooding. Mm-hmm. Part of that, you know, once you start failing some levees, we could have way more damage than what we've got now. I think the LA River, you know, it hasn't flooded since it was channelized in 1938. There will be a storm at some point that will exceed it, just sort of almost by definition.
So you are known primarily as the earthquake expert, but is this something that you fear more than the so-called big one?
They're different. Yes, I think so. I mean, in my last decade at the U.S. Geological Survey, I overseed what was called the multi-hazards demonstration project. So the first part was shakeout, looking at what the earthquake would do. And the second one was arc storm. I was the chief scientist for the arc storm project to try and understand the extent of flooding. And it depends on what part you fear. Basically, this storm with a comparable probability to the earthquake did four times as much damage financially, partly because it's statewide. But the storm we modeled, which was about a month's worth of rain, it's a sort of a, you know, I said, keep, you know, take this week and have it go on for a month. And we flooded 24% of the properties in California. So the financial impact is much larger. But it plays out differently because you can predict a storm, right? And if you handle it right, if you do your evacuations right, you don't kill people. We don't have that option with earthquakes. All of that has to be done with preparation and, you know, building better buildings and whatever. So, and just psychologically, We do not fear rain as much as we do earthquakes, even though they kill as many, if not more, people.
Interesting. Yeah, because we have rain all the time. We don't have earthquakes all the time, or at least we don't feel them all the time.
But also, you can see, because you can see it coming, because it's predicted, those both make it seem more manageable. And you could argue that it's actually that we're unduly afraid of the earthquakes. And I would say we are unduly afraid of dying in an earthquake and insufficiently afraid of being bankrupted by the earthquake.
Okay, I guess we'll end on that sort of positive note. Dr. Lucy Jones is author of the book, The Big Ones, How Natural Disasters Have Shaped Us and What We Can Do About Them. Lucy, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, how scientists are using geoengineering to try to save a fast-melting glacier near Greenland that could cause massive sea level rise. That's next on Press Play.